and You're on the Front Porch, where we tackle tough issues facing West Virginia and Appalachia like you and your friends do on your front porch. This week, the House has kept its promise. It's passed a bill to repeal Obamacare. All three West Virginia congressmen voted for it. Critics say it would hit low-income and older people particularly hard. Also, should pets be allowed in the workplace? And if so, under what conditions? This is a really pressing issue here at West Virginia Public Broadcasting, and Rick and Lori are going to help me figure it out. The Front Porch is sponsored by the Charleston Gazette-Mail, using its CGM app to deliver the latest news, traffic, and weather alerts. Download the CGM app at iTunes or Google Play. Joining me, as always, is conservative lawyer Lori Lynn. Hey, Lori.
Hi, Scott.
And Rick Wilson, liberal, goat-herding, Greek-loving, hillbilly-philosophizing, American Friends Service Committee working co-host. Hey, Rick.
That would be me. Hey, Scott.
So last week, the House of Representatives passed the American Health Care Act. Rick, I take it you're not a 100% fan of this thing?
I'm going to use a simile here. You know, I'm not saying it's literally true, but this is what it would be like to be represented by people who hate you and don't care if you die.
Wow. So, I mean, seriously, what are your issues with this bill?
Well, I mean, it really wipes out Medicaid expansion over time that's brought coverage to 175,000 people in this state.
Because it block grants Medicaid. And you think that eventually will mean less?
Yeah, the CBO says by 2020, it's basically going to undo Medicaid expansion by changing the way Medicaid is funded. That's one out of three people in the state if you change the overall Medicaid system. That's not just people who got covered from the expansion. It's seniors, it's kids, people with disabilities.
Yeah, let's dig into that one just a little bit. Tom Price, the Health and Human Services Secretary at the national level, he said that the flexibility that would be built into the Medicaid bill would allow states to be able to do more with less. Isn't flexibility a good thing?
Scott, we're going to cut your pay to like $40 a week, but you can spend it any way you want to. Just knock yourself out there, buddy.
All right. So there's that. What else besides the Medicaid cuts do you not like?
I can't really be nice about this one, guys. Sorry. The hypocrisy of coming to West Virginia to talk about the opioid addiction when you're supporting a policy that will take away medically assisted treatment from tens of thousands of people in this state. I have talked to people getting medically assisted treatment because they're covered by Medicaid expansion. I know a woman who's now working. She has her kids. She was under house arrest. Now she's working, paying taxes, assistant manager at a restaurant. She is terrified about losing the treatment under Medicaid expansion. And there's several people like that. They say, without this, I would be dead. I'd lose my kids. I'd be in jail.
But Obamacare wasn't this panacea. There were lots of issues, one of which being there's very little choice on the individual healthcare market in West Virginia. Costs were still going up pretty substantially.
Yeah, one of the things that, you know, you don't hear addressed when you talk about kind of the parade of horribles under this new bill is the people who were hurt very much by Obamacare. People on the individual market who were fairly healthy, maybe young, maybe not, who had plans that they were happy with pre-Obamacare and saw their premiums skyrocket, giant deductibles. And again, we're talking about people who made enough money that they couldn't qualify for subsidies, but still not wealthy people. We're talking about middle-income people. And suddenly, what used to be a manageable expense for them is multiple times more than their mortgages. I mean, what was happening with that was we were asking a pretty small group of people, because about 90% of us get our health insurance through an employer. We're talking about the individual market. And we were asking those people to bear the entire cost of subsidizing the sick people in the individual market. And the sick people in the individual market tend to be sicker than average. You know, parts of this bill, however flawed it might be overall, is an honest attempt to grapple with that in a way that economically will work. But I have to give people credit, you know, including Secretary Price, who are trying to deal with this in a serious way, in a way that is going to work economically. And I don't think it's heartless. I think they truly have good intentions. You can dispute what's going on with the Medicaid stuff. I'm not going to defend that here. But I do have to give them credit for what they're doing with the individual market, which was a mess before Obamacare, and Obamacare has only made far worse.
There are a lot of problems with the Affordable Care Act. And unfortunately, you know, solutions have been blocked for several years. So I think people really wanted it to crash rather than to fix it. And I think that's one. We interviewed a lot of people who are covered by this in various ways, including people who had to buy it on the exchange and who said they were paying too much and said that, you know, it's crazy, it's not affordable. They also said, you know, paraphrasing several people we talked to, it's bad, we can't afford it, but don't take it away, including one person, really memorable. She had multiple health conditions. Her husband said, if we take this away, they might as well start digging graves because people are going to die. And this was a woman who really was like an outlier in terms of the care she needed. And yeah, that would drive up costs for the younger and the healthier people. Another guy was a coal miner who didn't have enough years in to get full medical. He had to buy insurance for his wife on the exchange. It was really expensive, unaffordable, but it saved her life because she had a heart condition and needed surgery. So,
yeah, the Senate really has a big lift ahead of it, the Republicans in the Senate, because they need to make this more politically palatable. Just on a policy level, there's so much here that they're going to just have to delve into. I mean, I thought it was striking that Senator Capito said very unequivocally, we have to deal with the pre-existing conditions, and we have to make sure that people with pre-existing conditions are protected. And policy-wise, that's what she's implying, is a pretty big shift away from some of the provisions that the House passed. So not only does the Senate have a very tough job, but then whatever the Senate comes up with, there's going to have to be a conference committee to reconcile the two versions of the bill. And those folks are really, really going to have a tough time.
The idea that I'm going to vote for it in the hopes that it gets fixed is like, I'm going to throw a baby to Lori and I hope she catches it. But if not, you know, it's not my fault.
Well, no, it's exactly what Nancy Pelosi said. We have to pass the bill to see what's in it. And that, in her defense, that was what she was talking about, right? The House had to pass it, and then it then went to the Senate. That's what she was saying. So it's exactly the same process by which Obamacare was passed. It was this reconciliation process because Senator Kennedy died and a Republican was elected to replace him, and they no longer were going to have 60 votes. So they had to do it by reconciliation, which only takes 51. We're right back, process-wise, again, in the same place that we were in 2009 with Obamacare.
So if I want to go back to your point about the role of government in health care. It's kind of funny when you think Medicare, how many people that covers, Medicaid, about 70 million CHIP, TRICARE for people in the armed services, Veterans Administration. So
you know what I think? It is, Rick. I think there's a conversation here about worthy and unworthy recipients. It's a deserving and undeserving all over again. People in general are more likely to say veterans deserve to have some good health care and have it paid for by the government, and because in their mind, veterans paid for it by their service. Elderly people, there's an idea out there, and it's not true, that the folks that are getting Medicare paid for it. They paid for some of it, but the cost of taking care of the Medicare population is much higher than the money that was put into the Medicare fund. That's another story. But there's this idea that, hey, I paid for it, now I'm getting it. Whereas the idea, and it's so strong in West Virginia, that the people who are getting these benefits under Obamacare aren't deserving. They're drug addicts, and they don't deserve the help, or they're poor people, and they don't deserve the help. I think that explains why that old question, like, why would all three of the representatives of West Virginians, who I think objectively are going to lose more than other states under this health care plan, why would they all vote for it? And why would West Virginians be cool with that? And I think it's because the West Virginians who vote have a really dim view of people who get government benefits like this.
Although many of them do.
Maybe they hate themselves. I mean, what do you think, Rick? I mean,
look at the demographics in West Virginia. We have like several hundred thousand people here who depend on Medicare. And one out of three people depends on Medicaid in some form, including like 70% of nursing home stays, half of all births.
So explain to me, there must be literally thousands of voters who both depend on Obamacare and voted for people like Representative Mooney, for example, who made it very clear he wanted to repeal it. What's going on there?
I mean, some of the people I interviewed probably supported, you know, Trump. I didn't ask, but they probably did so for other reasons, or they believed his promise not to mess with Medicare, Social Security, or Medicaid, or they thought maybe he would replace it with something better, but now we're dealing with the reality coming up.
Help me out here, Lori. What's going on here? Are people willing to sacrifice their own personal government benefits on behalf of a larger ideal, or do they not understand what's happening, or what's going on?
I would say the number of people who truly benefited from Obamacare and also voted for, you know, Mooney, McKinley, Jenkins is probably smaller than you think. I mean, first of all, we have a pretty low voting rate here, right? It's like 50%, even lower. So a lot of people aren't voting to begin with. And then a lot of people who are voting for the other guy. And so when, you know, you're a Republican congressman in West Virginia looking at your base, it probably doesn't include a whole lot of the people that Rick is talking about. Again, I mean, what is the number, Rick? 100 and how many thousand?
180 got the Medicaid expansion, if I remember right. 180,000.
In any given year, it's like 200,000. But that's like, you know, that churns a lot.
Yeah, so I mean, that's a lot of people. But probably voting rate in that demographic is lower than the average. So, you know, what? How many, 20% of those people vote?
Meanwhile,
30%?
It generates resentment among other folks that see, like the population you're talking about, folks that saw their rates go way up and they're still trying to pay it. Meanwhile, there are people that are slightly poorer than them that are getting subsidies or getting Medicaid for free, and that breeds resentment.
Right,
I think it needs to be fixed, no question. There are a lot of problems with it. I think Lori and I would agree on that part of it.
I mean, that's the whole problem with having a needs-based program like Medicaid. There's always going to be a line between people who get it and don't. And when you don't get it, you'll resent the people who do.
That's why Social Security and Medicare are a little bit harder to attack than some of the other programs. And, you know, that's why I think that they're actually a good model, so that it's not a question of the worthy and unworthy. But going back, there are other factors at risk here besides that. I mean, the hospitals in the state have reported millions of dollars of reduction in the cost of uncompensated and charity care. And by reducing that, that also reduces premiums that people have to pay. I mean, if that jumps up through the roof, you think premiums are going to go up or high now. They're going to be outrageous then.
Let's talk about jobs.
Yeah, let's do.
Let's do. I mean, and that, by the way, the budget that passed the legislature that was vetoed by the governor, the way that they got to balance was cutting $90 million out of Medicaid, which would have drawn down another $180 million in federal funds. You might have a problem with that philosophically. But mathematically, doesn't it make sense for the state to get as much federal money as it can and use that to hire nurses and home health aides and doctors? I mean, if you're just being cynical about it, isn't it a job killer to not spend that $90 million?
WVU actually investigated that in 2001, and they found that Medicaid supported thousands of jobs in the state, including in the retail sector and others. That's the only share of the economy that's grown up where jobs have increased.
I mean, Lori, aren't we getting people in California to subsidize our jobs when we draw down Medicaid money?
Yeah, just on principle, I have a little bit of a problem with the idea that federal money comes out of the sky and, you know, we should just sort of hoover up as much of it as we can. I mean, I pay federal taxes, as do, you know, many hundreds of thousands of West Virginians, just because the money comes from somebody, you know, on the other side of the state line. I shouldn't care that it's being spent, you know, efficiently, responsibly, ethically. You know, I have a problem with that. I mean, I see the practicality of it, but just it makes me feel kind of icky on principle.
Well, and that's the whole problem with the what's the matter with Kansas argument, where people on the East Coast or West Coast liberals would look at West Virginia and say, you're a bunch of idiots. You know, you should be voting for people that want to shovel federal money at you, but you're dumb, too dumb to realize that. But another way of looking at it is that people here know exactly what's going on, but philosophically, they disagree with it, or they don't think it's benefiting them personally. I think it's more complicated when you get into it. Rick, I'm going to give you the last word. Why are you so and you're uncharacteristically not jokey about this?
And it's not really funny. I'm sorry. I have a dark sense of humor. I can laugh at almost everything. Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, did you enjoy the play? I have a dark sense of humor, but I don't really have much one about this. Sorry.
And is your Bible verse about this, Rick?
Yes.
What is your Bible verse for this week?
In what measure you mete it out, it shall be meted unto you. Sermon on the Mount.
That's vaguely threatening.
Just quoting Jesus, God.
And that's Rick Wilson of the American Friends Service Committee. You also heard from Lori Lynn, our conservative columnist. All right, we're going to take a break and we come back. Rick and Lori are going to help us solve the problem of pets in the workplace here at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. But first, it's a tough time in West Virginia state government. More than ever, we're depending on our listeners, people just like you, who are part of our 10,000 member West Virginia Public Broadcasting Friends Group. These are people that donate at any level to help make sure that The Front Porch, West Virginia Public Broadcasting's other programs, come to you each and every day. So, if you're not a member yet and you've been waiting for a reason to do it, now is the time. I'd ask for you to please go to our website, wvpublic.org, click that donate button, and take the 2 minutes it takes to become a member at whatever level makes sense for you. Keep The Front Porch and West Virginia Public Broadcasting strong, even in these trying times. And thanks. Okay, and we're back. I'm Scott Finn, Executive Director here at West Virginia Public Broadcasting, and we have a pet problem. When I got here, people were occasionally bringing pets into the workplace. There was no policy. By the way, shockingly, in a bureaucracy where everything else is circumscribed, there is no state policy on pets in the workplace, we have discovered. It's kind of up to you to figure out, except if someone has a service animal, you have to take the service animal in. And so over time, we've had more pets kind of come and more pets come in. Now we're undergoing a big move where we're bringing in a new tenant and people have been disrupted. And because of that, this pet issue has kind of exploded. Folks have expressed to their supervisors that they don't like the pets being in the building. Some folks, there's questions about health and safety, allergies. There's no one here that's so allergic that they're going to break out just by seeing, you know, your dog Bo in the thing. But if they were exposed to Bo for a long time in the same room, they'd have problems. There's issues of pests, you know, people leaving dog food out and worries about that. And then the more fascinating issue is it professional to have pets in the workplace? Does it make you look less professional if you allow pets in?
So are people complaining that it is not professional?
Yeah, exactly.
And we're talking about largely dogs, right? Are there any other pets?
No, it's mostly the dogs. I mean, no cats have been, to my knowledge, on a regular basis, have been brought in.
Hamsters, fish.
Ferrets.
People have threatened to bring in
iguanas.
Snakes, pet snakes. That has not happened yet.
Goats.
Yeah, no goats.
A goat yoga class.
So, you know, and Rick, you brought Bo into the front porch before. It's both lovely and slightly distracting. What do you think we should do here?
You know, I used to have someone in my family who was allergic to cats a long time ago. And like, our philosophy was, well, you could get better or die. You know, I think animals do make us human, to quote Temple Grandin, who studied that kind of thing. And some countries in Europe, you bring pets into restaurants, they just sit at your feet, you know. And my wife says that's a mark of civilization. So I'm in the pro-animal camp on that one.
I'm not personally anti myself having animals around, but I have noticed in recent years this attitude that kind of, it's almost morally better to be a dog person. And if you would prefer to not have a dog around, that's like, that makes you sort of morally suspect. And I guess I would push back against that. I mean, there are legitimate reasons. You know, I know people who have been traumatized in the past in their childhood by a dog and just get really, you know, nervous and anxious when a dog is around. I think you have to give that priority over someone else's, you know, desire to have the dog sitting at their feet. So I guess I have to side a little bit with, you know, the folks who are objecting. I mean, to put it another way, I mean, how would you feel if I said I want my baby to be here? You know, he's 5 weeks old. He's just going to sleep. I mean, I think it's okay to say no to that. And I think it's okay to say no to a dog.
It's okay to bring him. You've had him here, right?
Oh, well, right. I mean, it's fine to feel that way. And I think most people would. But if, you know, if you are a person who objects, who has a real problem, and like you said, allergies are, you know, a real thing. And I think certainly that's a health issue and that has to take precedence mm-hmm. over other things. So, you know, I feel for you having to work that out, but I urge you not to give in to this notion that it's like morally better to be a dog person than to not be a dog person.
Maybe case by case kind of thing. And also, is the dog out of control? Is it going to chew through wires? Is it You know, that's part. And also, like, worthy and unworthy pets. Like,
wait, unworthy pets? Talk
worthy
about
and
this.
Unworthy pets, yeah.
Snakes, what, very unworthy.
What's unworthy?
Well, you know, we're talking about worthy and unworthy poor. Yeah. You know, it's like, I mean, if you have a pet that's
that means
control,
that, you know, in your head, you've done the taxonomy of worthy and unworthy pets. What are, I'm going to ask you to share.
Well, like, yeah, if a dog here is going to chew through the thing or, you know, crash through all the equipment or
so
something
well,
like that.
So well-behaved pets. Are, yeah. are okay.
And check with people if they have allergies and stuff like that and try to work it out that way. But
well, so here we had a committee that met on this and they came up with two broad sets of options. One of the ways that we got people to like get out of their camps was to talk to them about, you know, things that everybody would agree with. And one thing that everybody would agree with is that if someone had a registered service animal, you would bend over backwards to make sure that animal could be in the building. On the other hand, we all agreed, like I think you guys are bringing this up, that if someone had severe allergies, I mean, the person's health overrides the benefit of the dog. So really what we're talking about is in between. What are the rules about the pets? Which pets, when do pets get to come and how?
So how often is another legitimate issue too, I think. I mean, it's probably too much for someone to bring their animal every single day or to bring a, might be hard to bring a child every day, but every woman I know has brought their child yes. to work or class. Sometimes I don't have a, I think that's fine.
I resisted, by the way. There was a camp here that said, oh, we have a kid problem too. Let's just deal with it all at once. I resisted. Pets are not children. Children are pets. It's a slightly different set of issues, but related.
But I'm saying there's sometimes when you just can't, like I only bring Bo here when there's, I can't leave him in a crate that long or when it's too hot and he can't be in a car or something like that. And I check first to make sure it's all right. But, and I think, you know, Lori doesn't bring all three kids here in the summertime. I think it would be kind of cool if she did. But.
So option number one is no pets mostly. No pets mostly says if it's an extreme emergency or if you're just bringing the pet by to say hello and then goodbye immediately, yes, you could have a pet. Other than that, no. The other one is kind of pets plus, which is you can bring your pets on a fairly regular basis, but not every day, not all the time, on a leash, in a contained space, food's put away, you clean up after it, and being respectful of employees who might have allergies or fear of the pet. So those are your two options. Lori, what do you think?
You know, it's hard. I would say it almost depends on the size of the workplace. With a larger workplace, with a second one, I just worry that not only that it'll be abused, but just because the lines aren't clear, that people are going to, you know, well, you brought your dog in twice last week, and, you know, that's a little bit more than occasionally. And with a workplace of 10 people, sure, I think you can totally, you know, people will work it out. Everybody knows everybody. But you have a bit of a larger organization. And so I think for that reason, I would go with the more concrete, you know, bring it in if it's, if you really need to, if it's an emergency, if you just want to show people your new cat or whatever. So I, just because you guys are a little bit of a bigger place, I would go for option A.
Option A for Lori. Rick, what do you say?
I mean, I think either one are pretty reasonable, but I mean, mostly no. I think mostly no is okay. I can live with either one.
Yeah, but I'm asking you to have an opinion here, man. Help me out.
I mean, some things I really do have an opinion on, Scott, and other ones I'm live and let live, so. But, you know, I do have a story about this, if that would help. I had to bring Bo to a gathering that included people from several different countries around the world, including there was a Muslim woman there. And, you know, in Islamic cultures, they're not big on dogs. Anyway, you know, Bo is rather promiscuous with his affection and just licking and everything. And she fell totally in love with him and couldn't keep her hands off him. And so, I sent her a picture by email. And she goes, oh, Bo, so adorable. I miss him.
Let me tell you what we're going to try then, based on what you're saying, and also the fact that I lied a little bit, and we've already kind of figured out what we're going to try. Since there was already people bringing pets in, and we're going to try the less restrictive of those two options, which is sort of the pets but with rules, and see if that works and give it a shot. But if it doesn't work, then we'll be moving on to the more restrictive policy. So I'll let you know how it works out. Another interesting thing that came up, it's a cultural and a generational issue. Most of the people who wanted the dogs are younger, and most of the people that did not were older. And here's another thing. Public broadcasting is a weird amalgamation of different cultures in the same building together. So, for example, we have people that raise money or who manage the money, and they tend to be in a workplace that's more formal. They're expected to dress up more, that sort of thing. Whereas the reporters, the producers, the creative types, they tend to exist in a world that is more informal. And each culture just seems to think that their culture is the right way to do things. And in general, Charleston to me seems to be more on the formal conservative side, at least in the business community that I've seen here. Women are expected to dress up maybe a little bit more.
Yeah, I'm just sitting here thinking, you know, in my law firm days, if I'm wearing pantyhose and heels, just something about that, you know, to have a dog there lying out in the hallway, I'm feeling, I made all the effort to dress up. Is this a barn that I'm working in? It's interesting because I hadn't thought of it that way, but now that you bring it up, I would feel different about it in that environment than I would in a more creative environment where people are, you know, wearing jeans and sneakers and it's very laid back.
That's a good point.
I enjoy working in a barn, by the way.
You do work in a barn.
I do work in a barn, yeah.
Well, hey, Front Porch listeners, let us know what you think. I know you want to weigh in on this. You want to tweet at El Cabrero, which is
the goat herder.
And also at WV Pundet.
Yep.
Which you're keeping now, right? Are you having second thoughts?
I'm still on the fence.
You can't change a brand. It's like Coke Classic versus the new Coke. Yeah. Just let it ride, I suggest.
But I don't want to be 60 years old and still have at the end of my Twitter handle. So I have some time. I'm not,
I think it's fun. And I think you're being ironic about the et. Right? You're like, feminists are like, oh, we're not ets. And you're like, no, I'm reclaiming the et.
Okay.
Taking it back.
Okay. That's a fair way to think about it.
Or Mrs. W.B. Pundit. I mean, that would be the other one. And I am at Radio Finn. Yeah, let us know what you think about this pet thing. And we'll let you know some of your responses on next week's Front Porch. So anyway, this is Scott Finn, Executive Director of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, along with Rick Wilson and Lori Lynn. Thanks for listening.
Yes, I love my dog, baby.